listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Hello, everybody. This is author Cal Wilson. Welcome to another episode of the Survival in Motion podcast. On today's episode, what I'm going to do is talk about some prepper basics, which I think is always a good idea to just kind of go back and review everything. I heard somewhere that September is preparedness month. I don't know exactly what that means, but I would guess it has something to do with respecting survivalists and preppers. Well, maybe not. But at least listening and taking it seriously when somebody talks about surviving something. Anyway, this is going to be an episode where I just go over the basics. And there are a lot of issues here that I'm about to talk about that could easily have their own episode for each one. So I'm gonna breeze through on all of these. I've got a lot of notes ready to go, and I apologize ahead of time if I don't give a certain subject it's due. So anyway, let's get started on today's episode, which is prepper basics. I'm gonna mostly refer to my two nonfiction prepping books entitled "Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping" and "Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat." And let me just start off by saying, statistically, we're not facing the end of the world next week. The more likely scenario is a lot of the people listening to this will be facing, say, within the next year, you know, a few days to a week of evacuation or something like that, you know, or a flood or hurricane. That's the reality. The reality is we kind of need to plan for smaller stuff because it's just more likely to happen. I do feel that there are some larger disasters that could happen. And specifically, I've written nonfiction books about the idea of an EMP, which I think is more likely than people will admit. But the reality is, you know, within the next few months, the chances of you having to face a tornado in your neighborhood or a fire or a flood or hurricane or earthquake or whatever, those are higher chance disasters. And so that's probably the better idea to what to prepare for. Now, if you want to take it as a few steps further and prepare for the end of the world, that's a good idea, too. I think that I don't think you can be over-prepared. I'll put it that way. And depending on where you live, it should affect what items you're storing up and what skills you're preparing for. I don't know, for a flood, if you live right nearby a river that's prone to flooding, you'll want to have, you know, something to help float. You'll want to have some life jackets, stuff like that. That's different from somebody who's preparing for the possibility of a fire. But all this goes into your thinking when you're deciding what to stock up on and what skills to prepare for. Let me just kind of sum it up. Let me sum it up here. Just remember the initials PSSP. And when you talk about prepping, you're talking about planning. That means, you know, looking ahead and deciding what skills and items I should have ahead of time in anticipation of this possible disaster. That's P. And SS, those are the things you are accumulating, stuff and skills. So PSS, and then P again means practice. So plan ahead and accumulate stuff and skills. And once you have all that in place, practice. And practice not only refreshes you on how to use certain items, but it also reminds you of what you have stockpiled. And in the middle of a disaster, that's the wrong time to reacquaint yourself with what stuff you have. that can help you. So that's why practice is important. Well, one of the reasons why practice is important, because it'll also remind you what you already have. All right. There are some sayings that are used in the prepping world, and I'll just mention a couple of them. The rule of three. The rule of three, which is you can survive for 3 minutes without air or 3 minutes in icy water. And I added that in honor of that movie I liked. I saw it on an airplane recently, Breakthrough. So you can survive 3 minutes without air or in icy water. You can survive 3 hours without shelter in a harsh environment. You can survive for 3 days without water, and you can survive for 3 weeks without food. These are general rules. You know, if you go through a period of no water, for example, you know, don't count on this, but it's just kind of a rough estimate for food, 3 days, that kind of thing. All right, here's another saying that preppers use a lot. Two is one, and one is none. So in other words, always have a backup for the most important things that you depend on. And like I said, PSSP, that's my own series of initials. Plan on having stuff and having skills. And then practice on what you have. The stuff and the skills. Hence, PSSP. Okay, now on to the basics of prepping. Water is, I think, the most important and underrated thing, not only stuff, but also the skill. The idea of going out and finding water and purifying it and drinking it. You always need a lot of good water, not only for drinking, but for bathing and cooking. And I would recommend you stock up on something called the Sports Berkey. It's about $20 on Amazon. And also cases of bottled water, just in the back of your closet. Just have a couple of cases of bottled water. All right, here's another issue. Food. Canning food, which, again, probably deserves its own episode of this podcast. Canning food. That's where you heat up food and you make it so hot that germs cannot survive. And then you put it in a jar and seal it up tight. That's called canning food. I would recommend also that you accumulate a lot of Mountain House freeze-dried food. Mountain House tastes very good, and it has a shelf life of, so they say, 35 years. And not only the big number 10 cans, but the little pouches that you can buy at Walmart, and some long spoons. With those pouches, what you can do is break open the container and get some boiled water, pour that in and mix it up. And I haven't tasted all Mountain House flavors, but I have yet to eat anything prepared by Mountain House and not liked it. In other words, everything they've made I've liked. Mostly lasagna, but beef stew. They've got some good breakfast stuff. So anyway, Mountain House is a good brand of freeze-dried food to store up. And it might be a good idea every once in a while just to say, hey, family, tonight we're going to have some Mountain House spaghetti, and just serve that to everybody. And treat that as kind of like a practice. You know, if we were without food or water or power, this is what we would have to eat. And I'll bet most of the family will say, hey, this is not bad. It might be a good idea to also save spices, which also, you know, enhance the flavor, of course. Regarding food, I would also add hunting and growing food. Those are two other skills that are important. Now, when it comes to farming, be on the lookout and prepare for pests. I have in my life grown food of different types, and it seems like there's always a rabbit who winds up in the flower bed, or some kind of bug or something. So not only seeds, but prepare for pests whenever you grow food. All right, here's another issue for the prepping. Here's another issue for prepping is weapons. And if you'll remember from that book I wrote, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping, I really went off on a rant complaining about governments, specifically the Katrina powers that be, confiscating guns. So I do think that it's a good idea to get, you know, accumulate some weapons and some ammo. But just in case your government decides to confiscate weapons, and there's always a movement afoot, it's just pragmatic to also accumulate weapons that are not guns. And I'm talking about knives, crowbars, multi-tools, which also double as like a toolbox. You know, a good multi-tool will also have a Phillips head, a flathead, also have a saw. It'll also have a little knife there, as well as obviously pliers. So multi-tools are good to have. And before I leave the subject of multi-tools, in my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping, I talked about a way to accumulate several used multi-tools by going on eBay and just looking up the term TSA, because a lot of people in the past have tried to, you know, accidentally board a plane with a multi-tool, and it gets confiscated by the TSA. And after they accumulate a bunch of them, they auction them off on eBay. I won one of those TSA auctions. I think I paid $30 or $40 and wound up with, you know, a whole bunch of pocket knives and like 8 or 9 used multi-tools. And so I have multi-tools in all of our cars, all of our desks, you know, and they're good to have anyway. They're just a handy thing to have. I would also add, as far as weapons that might not be guns, pepper spray. Pepper spray is a good weapon to have within arm's reach. Now, as far as guns and just where to start, if you don't know the first thing about guns and you just want to know, where do I even start? Check out episode 11 of the Survival in Motion podcast. Okay, here's something else to accumulate as good preppers. Flashlights / radios. And I don't think it's a good idea to have these kind of wind-up flashlights or radios. And let me tell you why. Because when you wind up something, you're charging a battery that has come with that radio or flashlight. And not all rechargeable batteries are that good. The best, in my opinion, of rechargeable batteries is a brand called Inaloop. It is made by Panasonic. So if you look it up, like on Amazon, you might find it looks like the same thing, but it's offered by Panasonic. The numbers are best for Inaloop / Panasonic rechargeable batteries. In other words, after so many rechargings and so much use, they still hold the charge. So that's why when it comes to rechargeable batteries, it's a good idea to stock up on Inaloop batteries. The better chargers, in my opinion, to charge up these rechargeable batteries is a brand called LaCrosse, LaCrosse. That's if you're able to plug into anything. If not, there's a brand called Goal Zero, which is a solar battery charger, Goal Zero. Okay, here's something else to charge up or to accumulate. Here's something else to accumulate. Medicine, especially prescription stuff and Band-Aids. Keep all this, and right now this is really inexpensive stuff. So stock up on the basics, you know, aspirin, Tylenol, Benadryl, which also doubles as a good sleep aid. Benadryl is good to have around because you never know if somebody or yourself might be in an emergency situation and they will eat some food that they're not familiar with or they will be allergic to. So that's why you need to have Benadryl. And also it's a good idea to have stomach ailment type medications, Pepcid, Imodium AD, that kind of thing. Because in an emergency situation, you'll be eating a bunch of unfamiliar food. Sometimes it's just bad food. So you'll need to have something on hand that will help you take care of your stomach. Or if you're in a foreign country like I was a few years ago and I ate some salad like a dummy and I wound up with some horrible diarrhea, Imodium AD is good to have. Here's something else regarding medicine, and I would refer you to Dr. Prepper, I think his name is. There's actually a medical doctor out there who produces podcasts on prepping, and he's written books on prepping. It might not be Dr. Prepper, but whoever it was said that fish antibiotics are the same thing as human antibiotics. So it's a good idea to stock up on antibiotics, and you can go online and look up fish antibiotics. And I'm not a doctor, have very little medical training, although my handwriting is pretty bad, but that's as close as it comes to me being a doctor. But I've just heard from others that fish antibiotics are the same as human antibiotics. So the antibiotics, I understand, are good to stock up on are Z-Pak, penicillin, amoxicillin, and Cipro, and there are a couple of others. Now, while I'm on the subject of medicines, let me go off on athlete's foot lotion. Okay, and I wrote this in my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping. Athlete's foot is a fungus. So is ringworm in your hair. And they sell lotions that will help you get rid of these fungi. And mostly it's called athlete's foot lotion. Right now, athlete's foot lotion is extremely inexpensive. And a lot of times it's sold at the dollar store or at the less than dollar area in your local Walmart. But it is a good idea to stock up on athlete's foot lotion. And by the way, that covers jock itch as well. It's a good idea to have all this on hand because if the power and water and everything is down for a week or more, then you have to start worrying about people who are trying to get around without bathing. Can you imagine, you know, a month or more getting around? That probably involves walking through puddles and getting your feet wet and not cleaning. Like I said, athlete's foot hurts. And all of this stuff, you know, jock itch, ringworm, you need to get rid of fungus. And in the middle of a disaster is not a good time to start looking around and say, hey, I wonder if there's some lotion that will help me get rid of this fungus. You need to stock up on this now while it's cheap. All right, the next issue is money. Supposedly, and obviously this hasn't been tried yet, but the thinking out there is that if there's a huge inflation or hyperinflation, then the dollar bill, dollars will not be valuable for anything except for maybe kindling. So the thinking is that junk silver dimes and quarters, that will be the new currency. That will be things that you can have, that you can purchase at wherever, a barter center or whatever. And it's called junk silver because it's 1964 or older, and it's 90% silver, 10% everything else. So if you can accumulate all that, that's in small enough denominations that it's not like, paying $1,000 for something. And of course, they always say, oh, I don't have any change. You know, for smaller transactions, junk silver in the form of quarters and dimes is fine. And it's probably a good idea on your morning commute or drive home or whatever, or wherever you drive during the workday, to kind of keep your eyes open for a coin shop. And that's where you can just walk in and just say, hey, I'm looking for some junk silver dimes. and a nice sturdy container. And that's a good thing to accumulate. I think I talked last time about larger term precious metals, or I should say larger denomination of precious metals, like the single ounce gold Krugerrand coin. That might be something to accumulate as well, but I don't think that's necessarily a prepper issue. I think it's just a good diversification of portfolio issue, which is that for any given portfolio, a small percentage of it needs to be always precious metals. And in my opinion, the Krugerrand 1 ounce gold coin is the best. But there are others, of course. All right, here's another issue for prepping, and that is containers. And I just have a list here. 5 gallon buckets, and lids, the bug out bag, and I had a whole episode on that, Survival in Motion episode number 13, where I talked about what's in my bug out bag and how I purposely overpacked it because I don't know what I'm going to need it for. And I keep it in my car. And when I find out which disaster I'm facing, then I just go through the bug out bag and throw away a lot of stuff that I know I'm not going to need because it's not going to be that particular disaster. So I think it's, you know, I'm rare in the sense that I think it's okay to overpack a bug out bag, so long as you keep in mind that when you find out what the disaster is, it's okay to start throwing stuff away. All right, other containers. Freezer Ziploc baggies. These are small containers, but they can hold a lot. If it's made for the freezer, it's a thicker plastic. Also, cash tube, and that's kind of a 1 or 2 foot long tube that you can bury. I had another episode on cash tube prepping, and that was Survival in Motion episode number 26. Okay, if need be, if the power in your neighborhood is shut off for a longer period of time, it's a good idea to have a generator around along with some extension cords. Now, you might not be able to start up your whole house and your air conditioner and your daughter's hair dryer and microwave or whatever. But at the very least, you can hook up with an extension cord. You can hook up your refrigerator, and maybe if you have a chest freezer like we have, hook that up also, and then bring it outside to the generator. What we have, and what I've had for a long time, it's kind of a standard 2 kilowatt Honda generator. These cost about $1,000 each. They are great. I'm sold on Honda generators. I think Honda makes a generator engine that just wants to run. So, you know, a few months ago, I was out at work and I got message that the power in our neighborhood had been turned off for whatever reason. And I thought, well, I better hurry up and get home because I want to turn on the generator and hook up the refrigerator and the freezer. Okay. By the time I got home, my wife had already turned on our 2 kilowatt Honda generator. I thought that was great. All you have to do is flip this little switch on the gas tank thing, and then switch on the side so that the gas will flow into the engine. And just while you're starting it, turn on the choke and then pull that cord. You know, it might take 2 or 3 times at most. And then once it gets going, then turn off the choke, and then you've got yourself a great source of power to keep your food good if your power has been shut off. And like I said, they are very easy to start and very reliable. Honda makes a great generator. If you or your family, you don't want to bother pulling the cords, Honda also has a 3 kilowatt generator that comes with its own internal battery. And that way you just flick a switch like a car, and then it will start on its own. And it's 3 kilowatts, so it's obviously more powerful than a 2 kilowatt Honda generator. These 2 kilowatt Honda generators cost, I'm, I'm just going to ballpark like around $900 to $1,200. And when you buy one, it's a good idea to take a picture with your camera of the serial number. That way, if it gets stolen, and these things get stolen all the time, you can report it to the police and say, aha, here's the serial number and here's the photo I took when I first bought it. It might also be a good idea just to slip a business card or inside that panel, you know, that you take off. If you have to change the oil or change the air filter, there's a panel on the side you can unscrew and take off. Inside that panel might be a good idea with a Sharpie to just write your last name. All this is in case it gets stolen, and then you find your generator at the local flea market. You can say, hey, that's mine. And the guy will say, oh, but, you know, no, it's not. No, it's not. Yeah. Oh, yeah? Well, let me open it up and see. There's my last name. That's what I wrote on this when I first bought this thing. And as you can tell, I kind of have personal experience from these generators getting stolen. I also donated one a few years ago to somebody who was on a mission trip in Mexico, and it got stolen. So these generators get stolen a lot, all right? So keep that in mind. Another thing to keep in mind with generators is that they crank out carbon monoxide, and carbon monoxide does not have a particular smell. So keep it far away from your house, far away from your garage. I had a pretty big generator, I'd say, I think a couple years ago. And I was starting it and turning it off, starting it again and turning it off. And it was way out in the driveway. And then I turned it off. And then I walked through our garage and then opened the door on the other side and then walked into the backyard. And I had an immediate head rush. And my skin was turning a little bit red. Or I was feeling flushed, I'll put it that way. That's carbon monoxide poisoning. And you gotta be careful with this stuff. Generators crank out the carbon monoxide, and you want to keep that away from your house, away from any dwellings where people might be. If you want to have a heartbreak and learn, see how some people learn this the hard way, just go on YouTube and do a search term, you know, generator, carbon monoxide, sailing trip or camping trip. There's always, you know, like a news account of, I remember a few years ago seeing this on YouTube. A family went out on a sailboat and somebody turned on the generator and left it on and everybody died. So you got to be careful with generators. Oh, one other thing before I leave the subject. Generators. A lot of times, it seems to me that Honda will sell a generator to some other company, and that other company will put their label all over it. A couple years ago, I was in Costco, and I noticed a real, you know, inexpensive generator. And the more I looked at it, I thought, hey, wait, that's a Honda engine. But nowhere on the container did it say Honda or Briggs & Stratton, which is, in my opinion, not a good brand. But I could tell just looking at the engine that this engine was a Honda engine. So this was a Honda generator for essentially half price. So keep your eyes open for that too. All right, I want to, one other subject that's not totally routine for prepping, but I wanted to mention it, is retreat property. And remember, I wrote the book on this, Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat. In that book, I talk about the so-called reverse sticker shock that a lot of people who were born and raised in cities have. When they start looking at properties out in the middle of the country that are like 5, 10, 20 acres on up to 50 or 100 acres, you'll be amazed at how inexpensive such a huge piece of property is out in the country. And I include in that book a whole bunch of websites. You know, it's not only just realtors who will, you know, have a piece of property for sale out in the middle of nowhere. There are also some websites that they're selling big pieces of property out in the country too. Okay, as I discussed in that book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat, keep in mind that a piece of property out there in the country is not only good as a survival retreat, but it's also something that can be used as an investment. And someday, if you buy a survival retreat outside of a growing community, who knows, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, you might look up and say, wait a minute, this property used to be out in the middle of nowhere. Now it's surrounded by suburbia, and there's a mall right there, and there's a major, you know, highway interstate going by, and now all of a sudden your survival retreat property is worth a whole lot more than it used to be. Well, that's okay. You can just sell it and then start all over again, even further out in the country. This is possibly a way to be a good investment as well as a survival retreat. And I actually found an example recently, and let me see if I can bring it up. Let's see. I'm not going to say what part of Texas, but this was in Texas, and I've been, I keep looking on Zillow for other survival retreats or just property in general. Here's what this realtor wrote about this 5 acres of land for sale outside of a growing community in Texas. Remember, this is 5 acres of land going for $80,000. Okay, here's the realtor's blurb. Secluded acreage, 8 miles outside of, and I'm not gonna say the town, with hill country views, head on past this town A and town B wineries. There is a small cabin with electricity, an incinerator toilet, that's probably composting toilet. A water catchment system is in place with water plumbed inside the cabin to the sink and outside in a separate enclosure to a shower. 2 storage buildings. If you have been looking for camping or glamping, I've never heard that term, glamping, G-L-A-M-P-I-N-G, place, this might be perfect for you. And then it shows this kind of overgrown meadow with this little shack there. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that guy is a prepper. I just know it. Incinerator toilet, water catchment system, small cabin with electricity, it's probably a generator. Okay, so this guy apparently bought this 5-acre tract of land way back when, put on a shack there, and started working on it. This is a survival retreat, if I've ever seen one. And like I said, I'm not going to mention the town, aside from saying it's in Texas. Okay. Now, regarding the investment possibility of a survival retreat, I looked back into the tax assessment records for this property. And remember, it's 5 acres for sale right now, $80,000. $80,000. In 2003, the tax assessment was $10,380. Skipping a few years, here in 2007, the assessment value was $20,740. 2010, the assessment value was $25,640. Remember, this is $80,000 for 5 acres. Okay. In 2013, the assessed value was $36,730. In 2015, the assessed value was $51,170. And then in last year, in 2018, the assessed value was $82,000. Okay. So this is a survival retreat that I found on Zillow, somewhere in Texas. And like I read to you, the realtor's blurb, this is clearly a survival retreat. But whoever owns this bought it, it looks like in 2003, for $10,000. And they're about to sell it now, 2019, so what, 16 years later, for $80,000. That's not a bad profit. So, in other words, keep that in mind when you're thinking about a survival retreat. that, sure, it's going to come in handy for surviving anything, you know, beyond a month or two of power being down. I mean, this is a survival retreat, but it's also good as an investment. So I wanted to point out that real life example that I just found. Okay, here's another issue I wanted to mention as far as prepping. There's, at the back of my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping, there's a whole list of books and movies of survivalist themes. And these are great to bring, you know, you and your family to. There's just something about sitting in a dark movie theater, seeing the big screen, and seeing a protagonist, you know, who you start to like, and then that protagonist is in a post-apocalyptic setting or end of the world or some kind of disaster, and you think, man, I hope he gets through it, you know, or what would I do to get through that situation? There's a whole list of these movies at the end of my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping. My favorite one is Panic in Year Zero, and it's an older one. It's in the 60s. But it's basically a family going out on a vacation, and then the nuclear bombs come down, and the United States is pretty much over with. So their first priority is, how do we stock up on food, even more than we were already stocking up for this vacation? And then about halfway through the film, it changes to, how do we protect ourselves against the criminal element that is sure to happen in an end-of-the-world scenario? So a lot of these movies involve the criminal element, and how do you survive? How do you get through it? Like that Mel Gibson movie, Mad Max Part 2. I forgot how that was named, but that's a great movie. It involves a whole lot of bullies who band together and try to kill off these good people who are kind of surrounded. They're at this kind of refinery, which is not realistic. But, you know, there's an element of bullies in a lot of these survival movies. And in that sense, they're kind of like Western movies. You know, the Western movie, the classic theme there is the local bully and a good guy who's not as strong or whatever, or doesn't have as many guns, takes on the bully and eventually wins. The classic there are High Noon and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. But a lot of these movies, survivalist post-apocalyptic movies, are great to watch, and they're great to get you in the mindset where you think, oh, I wonder if I have the right weapons at home, or I wonder if I have the right freeze-dried food or medicine. I wonder how I would handle that situation. And I wonder what skills I should work on, you know, in case I want to survive this kind of a disaster if that happens. So I think watching movies is a great thing, and it's great to show them to your family and get your family in that mindset as well. Okay, so I'm just kind of finishing up here. I just want to say this. When it comes to prepping, don't ever stand still. Preparedness is an ongoing thing. Keep stockpiling stuff and keep learning and keep practicing and keep refreshing your mind on what you already know and what you already have, and keep moving forward as a prepper. Even though I've written two nonfiction books on prepping, and my two fictional books, Into the Grid as We Know It and EMP NYC to the lesser extent, but these all involve kind of survivalist themes. Even though I've written these books on prepping, I still consider myself a solid intermediate on prepping. I don't consider myself an expert, the most prepared person out there. And I would recommend that be your attitude as well. Always be eager to learn new prepping skills and to keep in mind other stuff, other items that you should accumulate that will help you survive. That's why I think prepper conferences are so great. I show up at these with the attitude of, hey, I'm all ears. I'm I'm here to listen and learn what other people know that I might not know. So that's the attitude I think you ought to have as a prepper. Just keep in mind there's always something else that you don't know or some other item that would be great to have and be great to practice using. So keep moving forward with prepping. Don't ever just sit back and say, oh, okay, I've got everything done, you know, because you don't. Anyway, I hope you found today's episode of the Survival in Motion podcast informative and educational. I hear the music. That means our time is up. Thank you for joining me. God bless.